Okay, welcome everyone. So nice to have you join us today for our FNC office hours call. Today we have the lovely and talented Annette Falconet joining us, and she's going to cover a topic, a non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And we were just kind of joking how Annette really is the queen of blood sugar and diabetes, and she was like, "Oh, I'm not going to do another thing on blood sugar." So she's going to do fatty liver, and of course, it comes down to what?
Blood sugar.
Right, exactly. So who better to bring this topic to us than Annette? So I'm thrilled that we get to spend time with her today and learn from her knowledge and her brilliance. And I'm sure she has a great presentation set up for us, and then we can go into some Q&A when she's done with the presentation. So I'm sure we all know you, Annette, but if you would give us just a few minutes of your background for the recording for people maybe that don't know you as well, and just a quick synopsis of that, and then we'll get into your presentation.
Okay, great. Sounds good.
Annette,
Thank
thank
you.
you.
So I started studying nutrition officially in like 2010. I've taken a lot of programs. I'm a program junkie. I will admit that publicly. If there was a group, I would join it. But then I found Dr. Rita Marie, and it's like, wow, I could have skipped that one and that one and that one. And I've been with Dr. Rita Marie since 2016, I believe. And in 2015, as most of you know, my daughter came home from college, was really sick, almost passed away, and was diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic. And it was sometime a few months later, because we had to get over the trauma in the first few months. But a few months later, I became obsessed with diabetes and blood sugar regulation. So that's what I have focused in on the last few years. And things that I have learned from Dr. Rita Marie in my training with her has really helped me turn things around for my daughter. And actually, Dr. Rita Marie's teachings kept my child out of the hospital for a second go round. So I'm just immensely grateful to have found Dr. Rita Marie and her group. So that's me in a quick little nutshell. So I'm a diabetes mama now, or as we refer to ourselves as the mama bears. So let me go ahead, but like I'm gonna share my screen. But like Kimberly said, I was like, I need a break from diabetes. I don't want to do blood sugar stuff. I'm gonna do a totally different presentation. And so I had a friend that I was working with, and she ended up having, I ran a blood chemistry on her, and I gave it to her. And because I knew she could read it, I wasn't worried about her. I'm gonna try to get this out of there. Okay. And she called me panicking because she had signs of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, but type 2 runs in her family. So non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. You know what? I didn't turn my camera off, did I? There we go. All right. So, okay, let's work. All right. So, disclaimer, you guys hear this all the time. I'm not a medical professional. This is info I've gathered from classes I've been in, just from doing my own research, being a blood sugar nerd. And if you want to take this information and have a discussion with a doctor, you can do that, but I can't make any recommendations on how to proceed with your individual health. Okay, why aren't we cooperating? All right, so let's talk first about some functions of the liver, because I can't tell you what's wrong with it until we talk about what it's supposed to do. What does a healthy liver do? And when our liver is healthy and doing what it's supposed to do, it performs over 500 functions in our body. So it's really an important, I mean, all of our organs are important, but the liver does a lot. It will convert the excess blood sugar that we have into the glycogen, which is stored. And then, of course, those stores can be released when we need them. It's also going to process all the blood to get the iron out, and it's going to store that iron for those emergencies, when we need that iron to be released. The liver also produces bile, and the bile emulsifies our fats, which makes fat digestion easier. And the bile also is going to carry waste away out of our system. Liver is involved in the production of cholesterol. Some cholesterol is good, right? I'm a fan of good cholesterol. The liver is also going to convert stuff in our urine, the urea that's poisonous and toxic to us, and it's going to move it out as urine. It's going to, any toxin you come into contact with, whether it be drugs, a cleaning product, you know, we're all being exposed to, if you're going out into stores, we're being exposed to a lot of quote unquote sanitizers. What are those things? I'm not concerned when I go to the grocery store of catching COVID. I'm more concerned of touching the cart and absorbing whatever they've cleaned it with through my hands. So I actually will take the plastic produce bags and put them on the handle of the cart. And it's got nothing to do with COVID. It's totally, I don't want to absorb whether it's bleach or who knows what they've concocted to clean those with, because that is then something my liver has to process and take out. Our liver regulates our blood clotting also. It's going to clear bilirubin. Like when my daughter was born, she wasn't clearing bilirubin and she was jaundiced. You know, when you get that yellowing of the skin and the eyes. In her case, we just had to sit with her in a window, or it was a little cold outside, and she was fine. So non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. It's exactly what it sounds like. Fat has accumulated in your liver. And it's too much fat that's sitting there. It's normal to have some, but it doesn't take much, as you can see. It's only 5% fat before you're considered to have fatty liver disease. Normally, in most people, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease does not cause liver damage. It's going to cause some irritation and inflammation, but it's not going to be long-term, like, say, you know, a hepatitis could be. So, those of you that have ever been in a small group with me, you know, I like dictionaries. I want to know what the definition of something is, the basic definition. In my groups, it's for a couple of times we've talked about the dictionary definition of fun. Because sometimes when you look at the definition, you really learn things. Really, like I said before, non-alcoholic fatty disease, liver disease is pretty simple. It tells you in the name, it's just accumulating fat in the liver where we don't want excess fat. So in the past, only late stage alcoholics developed fatty liver disease. It just wasn't seen much in the regular population. You had to have had years and years of hard drinking to develop the scarring in the liver. Excuse me, I'll take a drink. But then modern, huh? I thought I heard something. But then modern food processing brought us high fructose corn syrup. We all know how bad high fructose corn syrup is. And prior to high fructose corn syrup hitting the market, there just were not that many cases of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease in the population. Then the high fructose corn syrup came out and the cases of non-alcoholic fatty liver started to grow. Now we're seeing this disease in children where it didn't exist before. The more sodas that the population consumes, the more cases of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease that are being seen out there. Another reason to stay away, but you guys know this, you've been with most of you have been with Dr. Reed Marie for a couple of years, you know to stay away from this stuff. In some of my research on this, I went through Dr. Ben Lynch's book, Dirty Genes, and he also backed that up, that fatty liver disease is on the rise. And he also tied it back to diet and the high fructose corn syrup. So what puts you at risk? Other than consuming high fructose corn syrup, people with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease tend to be overweight or obese. It frequently occurs in type 2 diabetics, and it's frequently tied to high cholesterol or high triglycerides. Some people are going to develop it and they don't have any of the risk factors, because we'll get to it in a few minutes. There's some genes at play, as I know you all know. this non-alcoholic fatty liver disease now affects up to 25% of the population here in the U.S. I don't know what it was before high fructose corn syrup, but that would be interesting. I should have looked that up. This is more on the risk. Insulin resistance is one of the strongest risk factors. Most of you, I think, are in sweet spot right now, or maybe you've moved into state in the sweet spot, and this is what you're working on. So as you get your insulin resistance down, you're also going to be able to reduce your risk to this condition. Again, we're back to, you're going to develop, your odds of developing non-alcoholic fatty liver disease go up if you're overweight and you just don't move. And you guys are learning in all of the programs about getting out there and exercising. Even your burst exercises will help you here. So, as I said before, your genes could be setting you up to have the possibility of developing, because we all know genes don't determine. You need other causes. There has to be an environmental, a trauma trigger. There's a trigger. So the gene that's at play here is PEMT. And the PEMT gene produces 15 to 30% of the phosphatidylcholine that we need. And phosphatidylcholine keeps your cell membranes healthy. It keeps them fluid, so you know materials can easily flow in and out. And PEMT also plays a role in the methylation cycle. And I was looking in one of Dr. Reed and Ray's favorite resources, the genetic testing book. I think some of you have used, you've run your genes through their filters. And she has, for the PEMT gene, when you have low levels of phosphatidylcholine, your health risks are hindered brain development and memory loss. None of us want that. Muscle fragility. Again, she talks about the issues with the fatty liver and high liver enzymes, high triglycerides, infertility, and endometriosis. So there are some serious, there can be serious complications here. I'm not worried about the fertility part anymore, thank goodness. Triglycerides kept coming up. So triglycerides, the phosphatidylcholine moves the triglycerides out of the liver, and that reduces your chances of developing non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And just on a personal note, phosphatidylcholine is actually one of my favorite supplements. I don't use it all the time. I use it when I need it. And I have found that every once in a while, I'll have like a loss for words. And when I take that phosphatidylcholine for just a couple of days, that clears. So I'm a big fan of, it's one of my favorites. In fact, I have it ordered right now. Okay, so what are signs? If you're thinking, I wonder if I have that. Frequently, there are no signs. Some people just don't have any signs at all. One of the signs I didn't list here is some people report pain in the liver area. And remember, your liver's on the right side under your ribs. Some of the symptoms can be a fatigue or a weakness, jaundice, which I mentioned before. Some people actually lose weight, itching, the loss of appetite, nausea, of course, are going to lead to the possible, the weight loss, swelling of the legs and abdomen. And that has to do with the fact that those cells aren't that permeable. We were talking about how the PEMT affects the ability of the fluids to move in and out of the cells. That can lead to or play a role in the swelling, the edema. And then, of course, mental confusion. Consequences. You can get sclerosis, which is scarring. It's one of the lesser ones, and it can impair your liver's ability to function. And if you get sclerosis, which none of us want, it can progress sometimes to more serious conditions. Usually mild cases of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, it can be turned around and we'll get there. It usually doesn't lead to more serious conditions. For milder cases, early diagnosis and jumping in with some lifestyle changes, we'll turn it around and help preserve your liver's function and health. not, so it can lead to metabolic syndrome. This is kind of like a circle thing. It can lead to blood sugar issues, and blood sugar issues can help cause it. It can increase your risk for getting type 2 diabetes. And it can also bring on some heart issues. So we want to turn this around. This is nothing we want hanging around with us. You can get blood work done. And here's the panel that you can have done on your blood work. And if you're doing any basic like blood work, like a CBC, I believe all these are on there anyway. The ALT and the AST are liver markers. So we can reverse. If you have some stage of the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, you can reverse it. And it goes back to lifestyle changes. Again, you guys have learned this in your time with Dr. Rita Marie. Eat more greens. Drink your greens if you prefer them in smoothies. It's totally, a lot of it goes back to what you're eating. I hate the word diet, but I prefer eating plan, but most people know what diet means. Exercise. You know, we've got to be moving. We can't be sedentary. You know, love your liver and your liver will love you. And we've got to do some things to support our liver. And of course, it's going to be, like I said, when I go to the grocery store, I don't touch the carts. I'm trying to limit the amount of toxins I take in, and that takes some stress off of my liver. The less I'm stressing my liver, the clearer it is to work and do the other things I need it to do. And because of my chemical sensitivities, I already don't have a lot of chemicals in my house. So, you know, I've already taken a big load off my liver. So if Lynn ever listens to this, I'm sure she'll correct me, because I know this is her area, her expertise. But some of the herbs that can support your liver is milk thistle. And it's actually one of the more popular herbs because it treats and repairs the liver, which, you know, we all need. And if you're moving into non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, okay, so someone's mowing in my neighborhood, sorry. The milk thistle is also going to optimize, it's in my yard, huh? It's gonna help protect the liver by optimizing its functions and supporting the liver in the detoxification range. Turmeric is another herb that supports our liver. It's a well-known anti-inflammatory, and it's also shown to be beneficial in reducing the risk of the fatty liver disease caused by stress. And right now, I think we all have some extra stress going on. When we have regular stress, and then we've got the added with what's going on out in the world right now. They did a study in cows, and they found that stressful conditions can lead to changes in the liver. And these changes, of course, can lead to the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. When they gave the cows turmeric, they were able to bring those risk factors back down and turn around the chance of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. I think I'm going to be saying that in my sleep for the next few days. Beetroot is another herb that can support our liver. It's a detoxifier. There's a pectin in the beets, and it's considered to stimulate the cleansing action of the liver and to assist in the removal of toxins. I love beets more than beets love me, because beets can spike my blood sugar. So I have to be careful when the amount of beets that I eat. I'm going to move. So if you hear me moving, it's because these guys are out here. I moved a little bit farther from the window. Sorry about that. So I have to be real careful on beets. And I remember when I first started juicing beets, hearing that you had to start slowly on the amount, because if you had too much beet juice going in too fast, it could cause a liver dump. I didn't listen, and yes, I caused a liver dump. It was not very pleasant. Okay, ginger is another herb that supports our liver. Ginger is great because of its anti-inflammatory properties, and ginger is absolutely, it can be vital to liver health. And you can get these, some of these things as, you know, you can get ginger as a tea. You can make your own tea. I did GAPS training, and they served us fresh ginger tea every day, and it was amazing. It was really good. Remembering that inflammation plays a big role in developing non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and the ginger is going to help bring that inflammation down. Researchers did some randomized testing, and there's evidence that ginger supplementation can increase the effectiveness of the lifestyle changes that we were talking about making. So if you're exercising, you're eating better, and then you're supplementing with ginger or having ginger tea, it's going to increase the benefits you're getting from the other lifestyle changes. Dandelion root, again, you can get this as a tea. I think sometimes I can get it at the store here. It aids liver function by improving the body's ability to remove toxins while also boosting the production of bile. And we need that bile. Bile is good. It's our friend. Researchers found that high concentrations of antioxidants in the dandelion root can protect your liver cells. So this was a cool thing I found in my research. I can't vouch for the accuracy of it. I actually posted this in the Sweet Spot Facebook group. And you can go and you can just Google NAFLD online calculator, and you'll get a couple of them. And you just enter this information in, and then it tells you the odds of you developing fatty liver disease. I didn't know my BMI, so I had to go and find someplace else where I could get my BMI in pounds and then convert it. But it's actually pretty cool. Do I think it's this calculator is 100% effective? Probably not. But I figure it's probably in the ballpark. So that was, feel free to go play. So just to review, we've got to take care of our liver, and that's reducing toxins, taking in those herbs. There's supplements, there's all kinds of things you can do to support your liver that I didn't even go into. Exercising, of course, because we've got to keep moving. We don't want to be sedentary. We don't want to be sedentary for many reasons. And when we just eat and sit, you know, blood sugar goes up. There I am, not avoiding it. Your blood sugar goes up, and then everything there gets out of whack. We want to reduce our stress. Stress is not good for our system, including our livers. And of course, you want to eat well, eat those balanced foods. And it really didn't get into it, but you know, hydration is key too, especially like here in Texas, where we've moved into, we're hitting 100 now. So we need to definitely be sure that we're drinking enough good, clean water here as we move in. And I think, yeah, that's it for today. I hope this was beneficial to you guys. I do have my resources if anybody needs to see those. I am going to stop my share, and I will put my camera back on. There we go. So,
great.
Lynn says I didn't hear anything. You're good. Because she was my concern. I was like, Lynn, I'm going to pop off.
I didn't hear the lawnmower in the background you mentioned. It was all good.
Oh, good. Because he was right outside the window. I just switched companies, and they use electric. So it is quieter. That's one of the reasons I went with them. And I can go outside, and it doesn't smell like gas. So I'm really enjoying them.
Great. So we'll open it up for questions. I do have one question that I would love to see if you have any more insight in regarding beets. Like I love beets, but beets don't love me. Like you just said, like my blood sugar goes crazy, crazy high. I mean, like 180.
Yeah.
Which
I'm right there with you.
What the heck? So have you found a way to utilize, like, okay, so beet tops, great. It's not the same properties though as the beet root, right?
Okay, so back to GAPS. In this training, they made this beet dish, and it was beetroot and you make homemade Gap's mayonnaise. So it had whatever their mayonnaise is and a lot of garlic in it. And it's amazing. It's fermented. It is just, actually that dish isn't fermented. But I was telling Eva about how that day at lunch when they served the beets, like I had a small, we went down the line and we each got a small portion of everything. And then my friend's like, I'm going back. What do you want? And I'm like, a plate of beets. She's like, no, really, what do you want? I'm like, I want a plate of beets. So she brought me back a plate of beets. I went back a couple of times just for beets. We went on a break and they just brought out a fresh platter. We went to the coffee bar. We got cups and lids. We filled them with the beets. We took them up in our room. For dinner, we had beets. I wasn't testing blood sugar back then. I'm sure it was awful. But I was sharing this story with Eva. Eva ferments beets. I can eat those beets and I really don't have an issue. I mean, I don't sit down and just eat the whole jar. But if I have a serving on my plate and I'm eating it with the greens and the rest of the meal, I don't have an issue. Because I've spent the last couple Thanksgivings with Eva. And it's right there on my plate. And both times I've been wearing a Libre and it just has not been a problem.
Oh, that is really good to know. Really good to know.
I have a comment about that. My husband, Tom, makes the yogurt for us, and he ferments beets, coconut, and carrots, the rainbow carrots.
Yeah.
And my blood sugar is good with that. I can't eat beets, you know, just regular by themselves either. And we also found a line of fermented foods called Physiology, which has fermented beets and cabbage and other seasonal things in with it, like burdock root, ginger, those kind of really, really fantastic tasting stuff. So that would be another resource. We actually found it up in Madison, Wisconsin, where Sandra lives, at a co-op market there, but you can also order through the mail from them as well.
Cool, but, thank you.
Yeah, if you ferment the beets, we use Bifido and Plantarum, then the Plantarum helps eat up the oxalates in the carrots and the beets. Yeah.
Good to know. Thank you. Yeah. And if I do like beet kvass, I can drink that as long as it has to be a reasonable amount. I'm okay with that too. If I just have like an ounce or so of beet kvass.
I wanted to ask a question too about, you mentioned in doing blood work that platelets are part of that, a part of the picture. And I wondered how platelets fit into the whole picture with developing fatty liver.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't really research that, but I'm willing to look it up and get back to you. Because now that you say it, it's like, and that is interesting. My guess would have to do with how healthy the blood cells are.
Okay.
But I'll look that up and let you know, because now I'm curious.
Yeah. I did have fatty liver disease when I started Sweet Spot 3 years ago. Over about a 10-year period, my liver enzymes were rising, and the doctor was not concerned until my GI doc got concerned, and I ended up having at some point an ultrasound which showed fatty liver, but he didn't have any ideas of anything to do about it either. I mean, this was 10 to 15 years ago, but by the time I got into Sweet Spot, I was 80 pounds heavier than I am now. And I, in the process of going through Sweet Spot and, you know, everything that I did, I dropped weight and my liver enzymes started plummeting at the same time. And I ended up having a CT scan for a different issue a couple of years ago, and it showed no fatty liver deposits whatsoever left.
That's good.
So just dropping the weight was doing that plus eating a lot of things that were supporting my liver, you know.
So you're proof that it's easily, okay, I shouldn't say easily, but it is reversible.
And I was not doing much exercise either. So that was, you know, confirmation to me that nutrition is the most important thing that we can do for our health, you know, in addition to, you know, I was removing some chemical things and we were getting air filters here and getting reverse osmosis water. So we were improving our environment in various ways at the same time, but still I do believe that nutrition was the biggest factor in.
Oh, absolutely.
In reverse. And
Lynn, as always, has popped up with an answer to the platelet. Lynn is like the fastest researcher online ever.
Yes.
Go ahead, Marion. Oh, because you popped up. So Lynn says that in fatty liver disease, that your livers don't, okay, and I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation. You're not making enough thrombopoietin, but it leads to a decrease in the platelet count, and it's produced in the liver and is responsible for regulating the production of platelets. Thank you, Lynn. Mm. And Lynn, if you want to jump in on the herbs, go ahead.
I have a tendency, again, genetics play a big part in this, but to metabolic syndrome and non-alcoholic fatty liver. So that's why it was like, oh, I have this somewhere. Where did I put in my list of research? So when I work with people, and myself included, I take more of that Chinese medicine perspective. You know, are you hot? Are you cold? What's going on? And so the first thing is make sure that you're not doing the heavy fats, you know, like cream and the extra fat butter, and what kind of fats are you eating? And just slowly start removing those. Because again, you were talking about the dumping. It's like, oh, I have this, I stop this. And then your body goes, what the heck did you just do? And it responds. So it's like, okay, we'll start by slowly taking these things out. And generally then your liver is swollen, it's stagnant. And so just removing some of those things, and then you want to stimulate it out of that stagnancy, kind of like, okay, let's wake up here. And so you start introducing, like you were saying, those pungent foods, the garlic, the onions, maybe some horseradish, things like that. Let's see what else. Watercress, mustard greens.
When I was doing the herb part, I'm like, I know I'm not up to Lynn's level, but I'll just hit a few basics.
Exactly. And turmeric and ginger, that's, you know, and that's the thing a lot of people have.
Right.
Well,
right.
A lot of the people here probably have some of the other herbs just because they hear Dr. Reed Marie talking about it. Basil. Right. Basil can be helpful. So just experiment upon the word, just gently start adding in these things as you just gently waking it up. You know, we're not jumping on the bed saying, wake up.
Like me doing too much beet in the juice the first year. I've grown up eating beets, I'll be fine. No, I really did. My liver dumped and I did not feel good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is not pleasant.
It was not a good feeling at all.
Exactly.
Oh. Right. And imagine like the standard American diet with high in seed oils too, right? That I would suspect has a lot to do with the fatty liver, not just the sugars and the carbs, right? But those toxic oils kind of built up and backed up in the system. And I like the idea of eating the foods too, but got to be mindful of the blood sugar, but eating dandelion root and dandelion and not just taking the tea, right? And right. and things that you can like really chomp on, salivate with, really start the digestion process even from the chewing piece is really important for liver function. And we don't often think about that liver as being part of digestion. Right. I don't think we often think about that. That we think of stomach and gut as digestion, but the liver is a really important, the bile production, really important part of digestion and assimilation.
It does a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a workhorse down there.
It is. Yeah, that's why they call it the little general. Yeah. You know, the other thing too, especially when people start transitioning over, if it works for them, I am not here saying everybody needs to be plant focused or plant based or whatever, but lots of times when people decide to stop eating meat, they'll eat a lot of nuts, and that excess of nuts actually has the same reaction as if you just ate a fatty piece of steak or something. You know, when I grew up, when we'd have steak, we'd eat the fat and gristle and everything along with it, and probably not the best thing for me, at least.
I ate the fat. I didn't eat the gristle.
Yeah, we ate everything. Sucked the marrow out of the bone. Because we have steak like once a year or something. You know, it's just that's what I really appreciate what you're sharing. It's just like pay attention to what you're eating.
Not only what you're eating, but like I said, you know, what are we picking up? What toxins are we being exposed to that we don't even know, you know? Your neighbor does, you know, bug bombs his house and you happen to walk by when the door's open. You don't know what you're getting.
And sprays the yard with Roundup.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that guy next door.
Yeah, we do too.
Well, but like, I'm surrounded by farmers.
Oh, yeah.
And they fly. Yeah. So they come in with their planes. You can see the smoke coming from it.
Yeah.
Really? I just like, and I can smell it. I don't know about anybody else, but I can smell it. You mentioned something about when you go to the market and you know, you grab onto that. So I also am in realizing, you know, you can't use just their antiseptic wipes because then you get that junk too. So what do you do?
So I will push it into the store. Okay. If I don't have to take a cart, I don't, you know, cause they were there for a while. You had to have them for the distancing. Now they're like, yeah, just whatever. So those days I just go in my own cloth bags and I throw them in. If I am forced to take a cart, I don't grip it. I like will kind of push it in. And then as soon as and produce is like, you know, the first department you get to. So I go and I get the produce bags off the roll and I put those on the handle because I would rather touch the plastic than whatever they sprayed with because they're out there spraying and they're all masked up and it's like, and now I'm supposed to touch that? So that's what I do. But if I can get through just with my cloth bags, and it's really good if I can get Samantha to go with me because then we have extra bags that we can get stuff in because I can only mule so much groceries, right? but I'm like, no, I don't want your cart. Thank you. So that's what I do. I have considered wearing my own gloves. But it's like I can kick the cart in long enough to get, and I might, and sometimes if I'm really forward thinking, I keep napkins in my car, you know, from wherever you eat out, and I'll keep those in my car. And if I'm forward thinking enough, I'll grab one of those so I can at least use that between my hand. Like I don't touch gas pumps, but I haven't for like 20, 30 years. Because I always use, I'm the weirdo with the paper towel on the pump.
Brainless, not thinking of that.
I haven't thought of that myself either. Like, duh, why haven't I thought of that?
And, There's a chain here. Actually, there's a couple gas station chains here now, and they had started it right before shortly before COVID. They actually put dispensers of plastic gloves out. So if they have those, I'll use their gloves. If not, I've got, you know, my throw down napkins. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't tell you last time I touched a pup paint. It would have been before I got sick in 88. So that's how long it's been since I've touched a gas pump. So good now y'all are in my world of OCD-ness. Sorry.
Well, and I don't like getting the drop of gas on my hand. Like that's something that I'm like, oh, I'm very careful because I don't want to get it because I don't want to smell it. And I hate that, but I have not thought to protect my hands from that. Good thinking.
And even though I've covered it when I get in, I still use, you know, some kind of a hand cleanser just in case. But like I said, that goes back to my being sick and my OCD about things. Mm-hmm. And my kid doesn't touch the pump either. I taught her from the beginning when she started driving. I'm like, and you don't touch the gas pump. So she doesn't. I miss full service. I'd pay someone to pump my gas.
Yeah. Remember those days?
They were so nice.
That was nice. Yeah.
I miss that. So
well, there's more things to worry about now because at the hotels, like we just traveled across country and we were in this one hotel. The moment I walked in, I felt like I was fumigated and it smelled so bad. Like I couldn't sleep all night. My chest was hurting. It's like, what is wrong? And then in the morning, they're like, everything okay? I'm like, well, what are you using? They're like, oh, we need to use very strong stuff now because of COVID. Like, yeah, so kill us with other things then. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. And so now I really need to look for that when I stay at a hotel. But how do you even look for that? Because people don't complain. They're like, oh, they're doing so much for us.
No, I stay in hotels where I can open a window. I look for that. Because, and I haven't, the thought of going to a hotel right now is just like, oh no, because of what you were saying. But I go online and I look, and if I have my choice of two or three hotels and one has a window that opens or it has a balcony and the others don't, I'm going to pick the one where I can open it up and get that air. Right. I used to travel with a small like air filter, and we would go and check in. And I would set it on the ionizer setting. And then we would go out for a couple of hours. And that way I could clear out that air. But, you know, I've got, like when I go to Houston, there's a hotel I stay at because it has a window that opens. And I can always get that air in the room. Like I'll turn the air conditioner on and open the window. I'll put the heat on and open the window just because I need that air to clean out what they're doing.
Yeah, this was in Houston. I should have told you about
that. You should have. Oh, are you going to move there?
No.
Oh,
no,
good.
We were in Arizona and we were driving across. So maybe we'll move. Actually, I think we're moving to Arizona, but not to Houston.
Yeah, good.
I have something to add to the OCD.
Yeah.
I have a wine personal air purifier that hangs on my neck, and I used to wear it only on the airplane when I travel. But now I'm using it other places when I go into a store because I'll start sneezing and my nose starts running, and I know it's the chemicals, and I have multiple chemical sensitivity issues too. So I've started wearing that, and it's fairly innocuous. No, people don't even notice that you have it. And then I have an air purifier that plugs into my car because I have issues with the vinyl chloride in the car plastics. But I have an adapter so I can plug it into an outlet. So I can use that in a motel room and just put it like right by my head.
Yeah, that's neat. I also take, I have a small travel diffuser that I'll use with oils that I can tolerate in hotels. But if I'm staying at the place where I can open the window, I usually don't pack it. So, but I remember you talking about your air purifier before.
So how do you check if the window's open? Because that's not, do you call the hotel or?
I've been known to call a hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll call. Sometimes you can tell in the pictures. I mean, you can tell if it's got a balcony on it. And so like the place in Houston I like is in North Houston. It's called The Element. You know, they claim to be green. They actually have filtered water for you to drink. The pool is a saltwater pool. And each room has a window that opens. So that's because I've been there. I know it. If I'm going to Houston, that's always my first choice. Like, I'll even pay extra to be there. I did go online once, and there was a Hyatt place not far from there, and it was cheaper. So I thought, okay, it's new. I'll try it. I could tell that the window's open. And I'm the person that pulls back the bed sheets and looks at the mattress to see if there's bed bugs. I went to the first room, and like I said, brand new hotel. There was blood on the mattress. So I dragged my stuff back down. I'm like, you know, uh-uh. They gave me another room on another floor. It had blood on the mattress. I went back downstairs, and the girl's like, so do you work in the hotel business? I'm like, no. She goes, oh, I was wondering why you were checking everything. I'm like, no, I'm just looking. No, I'm not going to sleep in someone else's dirty bed. So I ended up getting a refund and going back to my preferred hotel, and they took me in. I'm like, you won't believe it just happened. Oh. And they met the rate. Actually, I think she beat the Hyatt Place's rate. And I told the manager, I'm like, at Hyatt Place, I'm like, dude, I checked two of your beds and they have blood on them. And he's like, okay.
So what?
I'm like, it's gross. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, but yes, I have been known to call hotels and ask, do your windows open? And if we end up doing Shine Online Live this year at Las Pines, I'll pay extra to get a room with a balcony. Because I imagine that place is going to go nuts on the cleansers.
Yeah.
Well, and then I know they have that option as well as other hotels where you can say you want the non-chemical.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I'll tell them I'm chemical sensitive. Yeah. And most people pretty get that. Like, I haven't had a lot of bad reaction to that they try and be accommodating. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know about that.
And I think you're right, Michaela. I think that we are going to see a rise in liver problems with the situation that we're in right now.
But probably lung issues too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And liver is anger and lungs are grief.
Mm-hmm. Both are on the rise. Mm-hmm. With what's going on.
Yeah.
I wanted to make another comment to Annette that this would be a terrific presentation to do for a vital topic, mm-hmm. as well as sweet spot, because you know people who are new to this don't understand necessarily about NAFLD, and it's so silent until it reaches a certain stage. And I lost a lifelong childhood friend to this disease because it developed to the stage of NASH. You know, it went to that stage. And by the time she got there and started getting treatment, it was too late. And within a year, year and a half, she was gone. And she was 60, about 62, something like that. And she had type 2 diabetes that she had been diagnosed with by the time she was 50, even before that. We grew up together. I was 2, she was 4 when we became friends. And we got together at her house and we had peanut butter out of the jar and happy fizzy parties, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she was very addicted to sugar, but I ended up kind of following a different path nutritionally than she did. But part of why I got into Sweet Spot was in her memory, in her honor, because it was too late for her. But when she was getting treatment, she actually changed her diet. She actually started eating better and she reversed her diabetes. Her diabetes was gone by the time she passed away, but it was not enough to save her liver. So,
yeah. Sorry to hear that, but thank you for sharing. Yeah. You know, I talked about a friend in the beginning and I did her blood chemistry for her and we had worked together in a chiropractor's office. So I said to her, I've got this report. Do you want the practitioner version? Do you want the client version? I said, I know you know how to read these because we did this. And she goes, give me both. I went, okay. So I sent her both. That was on a Friday evening. Saturday morning at 7 a.m. I'm not awake Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. I start getting texts from her. And she's like, you need to call me. You need to call me. You need to talk me back from the ledge. I'm so freaking out. And I'm like, what? And she goes, this report. And I'm like, I warned you. You said you wanted it. And she's like, what is this? Non-alcoholic fatty liver thing. And just like, I spent a lot of time that day talking her down. And she's in total denial that there's blood sugar dysregulation in her family. I work with her sister too. So I know the family has it. The mom passed away from Alzheimer's. Dad is like pre-diabetic. And I'm like, no, you need to turn this around. So I kind of thought of her as I was putting this one, because, you know, when I was picking my non-sugar one. So going for my non-blood sugar topic, haha, I can't get away from it. So, but thank you. Yeah. It's been interesting, especially the gene piece and, you know, in the Dirty Gene book, although it bugs me every time he says your genes are dirty. So, just one of those little word things I get hung up on. Anyway.
That's interesting about the gene connection, because I am red in 2 of those PEMT genes. So that's, you know, it's interesting to make that connection to my own journey of getting NAFLD, because I never drank alcohol. And as I was getting the elevated liver enzymes, I was never drinking soda either with the high fructose corn syrup. I didn't do any of that. So for me, it was the blood sugar, you know, the insulin resistance piece was the biggest piece of it for me, and the genetic predisposition pointing and stress, huge stress during that whole period of 10 to 15 years as I was adding weight and my liver enzymes were also increasing. Yeah.
Well, it's good you were able to turn it around.
Yep.
Like I said, you're proof. It happens. You can do it.
Yep.
Okay. Anything else? I see Kimberly leaning in.
Any other questions or comments? Yeah, I'm just interested. I think it's so great that we're addressing that it's not just blood sugar and alcohol, right? That it really is. There's so many jobs that the liver has, like 500 known functions or something more than that, that we just don't even know what else it might be doing, especially with components that we don't know how to measure. Right, like we're just learning about the negative effects of Wi-Fi, and I apologize, the lawnmower's right up there. We're just really still learning that these subtle energies that we can't necessarily see are affecting us, and I would suspect have a huge burden on organs like our liver. And so one piece, like just decreasing alcohol or decreasing sugar, is not going to be enough. But how quickly, when we do remove those unknown toxins or the subtle toxins that we might not even understand are toxins, that can really make a quick turnaround. The liver can regenerate itself.
Right.
So when we do those things, that when we're addressing all directions that all of these toxins are coming, the liver, and we support the liver, it can regenerate really quickly.
Right.
Which all is the good news, right?
All of our organs regenerate. Some of them take years, and some of them do it a lot faster. And the liver, fortunately, is a faster organ.
Yeah, much faster. So it's one of the things that I think people often forget about, even just with allergies. I have seasonal allergies. Support your liver a little bit, and you'll have better outcome. So
yeah,
really important organ that we don't spend a lot of time on really thinking about typically.
Yeah.
So great, great information in that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was fun, as always.
Okay. Anybody else have any other questions or comments they want to share?
I was just going to say Ecolab is a brand of cleaning solutions that a lot of hospitals, nursing homes, hotels use. And I had a huge reaction last August when I went to a friend's apartment, and I was only there for an hour right after the cleaning woman was there. So it helps somewhat knowing the brands, but the individual chemicals are often the same in other brands. But this one is one that's very popular in institutions.
Yeah. And a lot of times you can't find out what those chemicals are because it's a proprietary blend, or it's listed as inert, and they don't have to list what inert is. So.
But my friend was saying, well, since she's lived there in 2 years, the amount of dementia that's happened in the people that live there, she said, is staggering.
Yeah, so it's probably the chemicals that are in the cleaners. And I remember you saying that when we were working with you back at the beginning of ERC. And, you know, I have my ex in an independent living situation, and they come in and clean. And he has COPD and all kinds of, he has a list of issues. And, you know, he's not going to listen to me. But I often wonder, after the conversation with you, what are they cleaning his place with, and what effects it's having on him? I appreciated you sharing that with us. Because it's not just me.
Wonderful presentation.
Thank you, Dawn. Nice to see you again.
All right, so if there's no other questions, we'll wrap it up. Thank you so much, Annette. Really great information, and nice to see all of you today. I hope you're staying safe and sane through these crazy times, and it's really nice to be able to connect with you all and kind of come to a place of peace for a little while. So thanks for joining us, and thank you, Annette, for a great presentation.
Sure, thank you. And yeah, Lynn, I knew that one.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.